All right, back here on the Big Show, I think we have restored order in the studio. DLC
yeah, because
is...
I went and I checked back. Out the film, the Steve. Video. I Steve. Sat down, I saw Steve. Five angles.
Steve.
I just got tired of it.
Steve,
it's ball
did we not just make up? Did we not just?
It's ball, as long as he knows he was wrong.
That's not right. You know I'm right. You disappear. You watch the film, come back here.
Fine.
I didn't see it.
Fine.
I watched it on TV right here when you were gone.
Fine. Let's ask Bill.
Oh, here's a towel for your tears.
I thought we restored order in the studio.
Yeah.
Maybe
this
I
towel for your butt.
I was mistaken. I tell you what, put it on the back burner,
I'm just
gentlemen.
Surprised that you did.
Got
that.
A couple of hours left here. Put it on the back burner. Next hour, Bill Belichick will join us.
I love you, Fred.
Here at the Big Show.
I love you, Pete.
Only at the steakhouse.
Yossi will show the video. Right now, it's time for our buddy Boomer Esiason.
He's your buddy, not
our NFL Insider, brought to you by Canon. Visit Staples. Check out their wide selection of Canon Image Class copiers, including the MF4150 with up to 9,600 DPI color scanning. Visit your local Staples today. Sure, you go through a lot of the same stuff, Boomer, on the set and television, right? The, you know, guys get a little out of control.
You know, I feel completely sorry for you, really. I mean, you have to deal with those two meatheads.
Thank you. Oh, I thought you meant me, Boomer. I'm having to deal with Fred. I can understand.
Wasn't it the Dan Marino incident last year? You almost pulled knives on each other? I brought that up.
It's not an argument that's going to go very far. They're both defensive, former defensive players.
There's not a lot of intellect in this argument.
Yeah. I was actually kind of impressed that Diassi, a defensive guy, went and looked at the videotape. That shocked me, Boomer.
That's
you know?
Right.
Well, but what videotape was he looking at?
The Wilfork.
The Wilfork deal. Oh, I get it. Okay. Right. It was a cheap shot.
Oh, stop.
Fred.
Quarterback. You never even watched it.
That was a cheap shot I saw yesterday. But here's the deal. Here's why that's not a good play, guys. When you have a bad player and he's playing for the other team, you want to keep him on the field as long as you possibly can.
It's a good point. Right?
Boomer.
It's a good point he made.
Boomer. Just through the eyes of a quarterback, he beat the center, that fat-ass center, tried to grab him from behind, pull him down, and that's what threw him forward. I watched it 10 times.
So, yeah, I think he extended his right elbow right into his lower leg.
He was falling down. He
was trying to cushion the blow?
Guys, I have respect for you, the guy of knowledge.
No, you don't. You have no respect.
I know. I'm just trying to sway you, but. But he was.
You're a piece of work, Smurlis. You know that?
I'm a poor piece of work. You're a rich one.
My point exactly.
Well, we got a lot to talk about today, and I want to hit on a lot of topics around the National Football League as well, because there was some wild stuff yesterday. But let's start with the Patriots, 3-0, and as you can well imagine, Boomer, everybody up here is looking at this team as a juggernaut. Obviously, too early, but pretty impressive so far.
I think I told you guys last week this could be the best team that Bill Belichick and Tom Brady have ever had up there, and they're playing like it now, and they're playing with a purpose. Even getting off to a bad start yesterday, I don't think anybody was worried that sooner or later they were going to kick it in gear. And you know, Tom Brady has 18 incompletions this year, guys, in 3 games.
16 throwaways.
That's ridiculous. That's insane. And then watching Randy Moss catch the ball down the sideline yesterday. Here's a guy that, you know, was in football hell. He was unlocked, and now he's in football heaven. And watching him catch the ball down the right-hand sideline yesterday and making it look so easy, effortless, and never lost stride was the Randy Moss that we used to see in, you know, Minnesota way back when. So
how many guys
no
can make that
in
pass?
My mind that guy now is all of a sudden reborn, and he should be because he's playing with the NFL's best quarterback.
But Boomer, how many guys could make that pass? I mean, that pass was the DB was up there. He jumped at the right time, and the pass just went right over his outstretched arms.
It was beautiful. I mean, it was, you know, people don't realize how hard that is for Randy Moss. I think for Tom, I don't think he's ever played with a guy as fast as him or as gifted as him. So all you have to do is rear back and throw it as far as you can, and sooner or later that kid's going to run under and make a catch. The catch to me is, you know, people are looking at it today probably saying, oh, that's, you know, it was right there, it was all this other stuff, but it was over his outside shoulder. He didn't hesitate, and he never lost stride, and it was like you couldn't draw it up any better. It was like the perfect play from all ends, the pass, the catch, the run, the whole bit. And, you know, they got it going on right now. But next week, and I'll see him next Monday night in Cincinnati, they're going to go up against, finally, a quarterback that will be able to put some points up on him because, you know, Cincinnati, even though their defense stinks, they do have a powerful offense, and that's going to really be a fun game to watch.
We were talking about that earlier. Different aspects from week to week are going to get a test. And next week, there's no question that the Patriots' defensive secondary is going to get a serious challenge here.
Yeah, they will. And, you know, they'll come out and they'll throw it 40 times if they have to. I mean, and they're going to have to, because I know one thing. Their defense is not going to be able to contain this Patriot offense. There's just no way that the Cincinnati Bengal defense, you know, unless they get a turnover here or there, that's how they beat the Ravens early on. But that was Steve McNair, and he was playing terrible. So, you know, it should be a very offensively entertaining game for the most part. The Bengals just don't have the horses to hang on to this Patriot team that is really, I mean, it's playing as good a football as I can remember any team playing in the last, 5 or 10 years. I mean, 38 points, 3 weeks in a row. I mean, flawless offensive execution, no matter what Bill Belichick says, you know, because I know it, you know, as a coach, they're not going to come out and say, yeah, we're flawless, we don't have to work on anything. Now, I guess there's always situations where you can get better, and I'm sure Tom will tell you he didn't want to fumble the ball yesterday on the goal line, but you know, when you score 38 points within your division, no matter how crappy the other team is, I mean, it's still an NFL team, and it's still something to behold.
I think it was a bad call by the refs.
But, Boomer, last year, how's this for coincidences? Last year, the Patriots played Cincinnati in week four, coming off a horrible loss to Denver, the Patriots. And they blew out Cincinnati, 38, no doubt, 38-13. You know, coincidence this year playing them again in week four. This is a better Patriots team. Palmer really struggled in the second half of last year. I mean, they really, you know, were all over him last year. I don't see him having a great game against Patriots defense.
I guess really it'll come down to whether or not, you know, Rudy Johnson or whoever their running back is, you know, Watson or whoever is going to have a halfway decent game. But the one thing I do know about Vince Wilfork and the defensive line. I did think it was a cheap shot at the end yesterday, but at the end of the day, those guys are so much bigger and stronger than the players that they're playing against that, you know, they're manhandling other teams' offensive lines. And I mean, when I say manhandle, I mean they're displacing the line of scrimmage. I mean, they're moving it back 2 to 3 yards in the backfield. The opposing team's offenses can't seem to function. Now, I will say that Carson will be back there. He'll be in the shotgun. He's got a rocket for an arm. He can read defenses as good as anybody in football. And he's got some really talented wide receivers. So there's always a chance for big plays on the outside because he'll get good protection. But at the end, really, when you watch the Patriots, it's all about the pressure on the opposing team's quarterback, which is what they have been delivering week in and week out. And I'm sure they'll have their opportunities next week.
So you're saying Cincinnati's only chance is a shootout?
I think so. I'm trying to think if I were going to play the Patriots, this is the number one thing on the dock. And I hate to say this because, you know, it's the unwritten rule. You guys are defensive players. I'm a quarterback, but when there's not a, you know, and we don't know about the backups now. We don't know about Castle. We don't know about Vinny being at the ages that he's at, how effective he would be for a long stretch of time here if he were the quarterback of the Patriots. But I hate to say it, but Tom Brady's going to have a target on his back. And, you know, even yesterday we were talking to Coward and those guys, and really what they would do is they would try to hit Tom Brady as much as they possibly can to get him out of the game. I mean, and it sounds awful saying that right now. That's the only way you're beating the Patriots if number 12 is not back there.
Hey, Boomer, you know as a quarterback, and you're playing against a team, and you said that the D-line is dominating, you can get pressure on a quarterback with three guys, and you can run that 3-4 without slanting or bringing guys. It makes it virtually impossible with the multitude of different things you can do with those linebackers to win a game. If you have a 3-4 that can dominate with the three linemen, it makes it so much more difficult to play against them.
Oh, yeah, you're not kidding, Freddie. And really where most – I think most of the plays have to be made are plays on the outside because, you know, I'm not saying that those are weak areas for the Patriots, but, you know, if you want to try to throw against eight guys as they're dropping back and they're only getting pressure with three, then it really makes it very difficult for the quarterback because he still has to make a quick decision. But, you know, those holes are tight, man, and they're not easy to get them in there. So, you know, there's really not much you can say that the Patriots haven't done in all facets of the game. Even the damn kickoff guys kicking it into the freaking end zone. So, I mean, it's all going good right now, and I'm telling you, it's a wave that they're riding. I don't know how long it's going to last. We know that sooner or later, they're human. You would think that they would trip up somewhere along the line.
Are they human, Boomer?
No, I don't know. They're not playing like it. You know, the one thing, too, is I don't know if you guys know this, and Charlie Castle reported this on our show yesterday, that the NFL set down yet another memorandum about questionable tactics that are being used around the NFL. And I don't know if this happens to do with the Patriots or not, but teams are using their cheerleaders to distract the opposing team in pregame warmups. And now the memorandum is that cheerleaders can
work on me,
the opposing team.
Now, how about that? How could you possibly do that? I mean, how do you pull that off?
You put a peephole in the Miami Dolphins cheerleaders.
Yeah, what about the peephole?
It has nothing to do with a peephole. It has everything to do with out on the field. They don't want the opposing team be warming up where the cheerleaders are warming up or something.
Oh, stop. Well, Boomer, this is a simple one. You know how you can solve the one with you know, he's stealing defensive signals is to put the headphones in the helmet, hire ugly cheerleaders, force them to hire ugly women.
You know, there's just no
like
such
the thing
as an ugly cheerleader in the NFL these days, guys. That's all I can tell you. So that's a memorandum that came down, and I'm just wondering.
You know what you do? Hey, Booba, how about this? How about having cheerleaders give signals because they're not going to watch their hands? Huh?
Yeah, that'd be pretty good. Defensive signal people. Yeah, that'd be good.
What happened to the good old days?
All right, let's run around the league here because there's a bunch of stuff we want to get to. All of us were talking about this last week. We really thought that this was the weekend that the San Diego Chargers were going to find their game. What has happened to that team? LT, 2.3 yards per carry, and I'm sure you saw it after the game. He was crying practically after
cried
that
here
game.
Last week.
Yeah.
Well, you know, three games in a row now, under 100 yards offensively running the football. Although Phillip Rivers actually had a pretty good game yesterday. I mean, he was going, you know, toe-to-toe with Brett Favre, and he had a great game. What's really shocking to me is their defense. You got, you know, the Patriots dismantled them last week. Their defense has given up huge plays, and they gave up a huge touchdown yesterday to lose the game on a basic slant pattern where the defensive backs were nowhere to be found. I mean, nowhere to be found. And, you know, that's the type of thing, when you give up plays like that, that's alarming. And that's 2 weeks in a row that they've done that now. So they are, and so is North Turner. They are under huge pressure right now. North Turner is hearing it from all over the place because he's the only one that's changed. I mean, the coaching staff has changed, but he's the most significant change, and everybody's looking at him. I still say they're a really good football team that has not hit their stride yet, and they will definitely be in the playoffs, but they're not going to have home field advantage like they had last year.
Talking about chants, fourth quarter last night in Chicago, greasy, greasy, that was the chant. Can Rex Grossman survive there as the quarterback?
I swear to God that Rex Grossman has pictures of somebody.
It's unbelievable.
You know, and listen, I was replaced in three different cities that I played in at one time or another because I was ineffective or I wasn't playing right or the team wasn't responding to me. And, you know, that just does not respond to that quarterback. And I liken it back to the day when Bill Belichick decided, you know what, Tom Brady's my quarterback and Drew Bledsoe's going to sit on the sideline because everybody's placating them, their play and they're sending the media. Everybody's, you know, hounding, you know, Bledsoe, and it's not good for the team because the team doesn't respond to that quarterback. And then Tom got everybody to respond to him. And I say this all the time about quarterbacks: if a guy steps in the huddle, and the 10 guys are in that huddle with him, and the other, you know, whatever it is, 42 guys standing on a sideline are looking at him like, you know, we don't have a chance to win in hell with this guy. You know, you don't have a chance. That's a strike against you. And I think that's where the Bears are right now, regardless of what Lovie Smith says.
Well,
I mean,
boy,
it's crazy.
He lost those two games. When he played last night, without him, if they just ran the ball and get off the field with a punt, they might have a better chance to win. He's just absolutely pathetic. Lovie, like you said, Lovie's going to base his whole career on keeping this guy, because if he tanks this year with him, as he did in the Super Bowl, they're going to start asking for his head.
You know, I know the kid's a first-round draft choice, and I'm sure he's a nice kid. And everybody thinks I'm this Rex hater. I don't hate the kid. I hate the way he plays. I don't like the way he plays. He looks to me like he's a deer in the headlights. Some of his comments after the game, the hat on backwards, the whole kind of like, I don't know why I do what I do. You know, that's not my quarterback. I'm sorry. And I'm not saying Brian Greasy is the next Hall of Famer that's going to take that team to the next level. But I'll tell you one thing, you can't change the left guard, you can't change the nose tackle, the outside linebacker, or a wide receiver to change the focus of your football team, but you can change that quarterback. And I think that they're going to have to do it sooner or later, and I'm surprised. I would be surprised if they don't do it this week, really.
And Boomer, on the other side of the field, you had a guy who might have too much confidence, if that's possible. Tony Romo was slinging that ball around like crazy.
He was great, you know, and he is to the Dallas Cowboys at his age right now and the way that he's playing what Tom Brady once was for the New England Patriots when he started. A little-known player, nobody really knew if he was going to be any good, and then all of a sudden this kid has the personality traits and he showed some of that stuff last year. What's really impressive to me is that, you know, obviously screwing up the point after touchdown last year in Seattle, the playoff game, this kid has come back and put that in the past. I was actually in Hawaii with him for the Pro Bowl last year and the fans were giving it to him.
Really?
And he was laughing it off and high-fiving and signing autographs, and I'm like, damn, this kid's got the mentality. And you could see. I mean, you could just see the guys reacting to him. And in a perfect lab test world, you take a look at Rex Grossman and his body language and the teammates, the way they respond to him, as opposed to the way the Cowboys respond to Tony Romo. that's why that kid's going to be the next big mega-rich quarterback in the NFL.
You think Tony, though, is so cocky that he just he'll stop making mistakes because he's overconfident and winging the ball in there?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think it's good for the Cowboys that they finally got a guy like this. I mean, you know, they had Troy Aikman for all those years, conservative, you know, tight spiral guy, was very careful about what he said until he decided to go after Jerry Jones this year for signing Tank Johnson. When he played, they had the White House there in the NFL, you know, at the, you know, with Michael Irvin and Nate Newton, and
Bill Clinton,
Eric Williams, all those crazy guys that he had. So
Steve DiOsi,
no,
right, Steve DiOsi. I think this is great for the Cowboys. I think it's great for football because the Cowboys are, you know, one of the most popular teams in the NFL.
What was the reaction in New York with that goal line stance yesterday against the Reds, especially when you consider all week long? Antonio Pierce was pretty vocal. Guys were pretty vocal, and yet they came up big at the end of that game.
Well, two reactions. One was, thank God the Giants won this game, or the Tom Coughlin chopping block, which might be still there, that head on the chopping block would have really taken full root. But the defense responded, and then the second reaction is that Joe Gibbs screwed up at the end of the game. Now, here's a team, the Washington Redskins guys, that has about 37 coaches on their staff. They have two assistant head coaches, and then they have two coordinators, an offensive and a defensive coordinator. They probably have about $12 to $15 million spent on their coaching staff, and they couldn't help that kid, Jason Campbell, figure out the last four plays of the game. It's criminal. It's absolutely criminal the way that game ended yesterday. And to have two pathetic running plays with Liddell Betts in the backfield as opposed to having Clinton Portis on the field, and that gives you your best chance to win, and you're paying all these guys all that kind of money, and that's the best.
And they guessed it, Boomer, too, didn't they? I mean, it looked like the Giants hit it right up. They brought everyone right to the hole.
I think that the Redskins reminded me of rush hour at Grand Central Station, and somebody yelled fire.
No timeout.
And everybody was just scrambling all over the place. They completely lost their composure. And, again, it's a young quarterback in a crucial part of the game that is just not mentally there yet. He's just not there, and that's why the coaches, you know, get paid all this money down there, really let that guy out on a limb, and they didn't help him. And I thought that it was probably as bad of an ending of a game that I have seen in a while by a Hall of Fame coach and his staff.
Did you think that they were trying to do it a hurry up? I'm talking about just the last play, on purpose trying to catch the Giants off guard? Because they had time. They had 43
You're
seconds
run
left.
A goal line.
They had time to set up and do a play action or something, but it seemed like Gibbs just wanted them to get up there and do a hurry up to try to catch the Giants off guard. It totally backfired.
They could say that today, but that's not the way it looked to me. You know, if it's Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Carson Palmer, everybody's calm. You know, everybody's fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like it's not a fire drill. It's not craziness. It's you got to have somebody that who sees things clearly and can handle the pressure. And I'm not saying Jason Campbell can't or won't, but right now, obviously, in that situation, he couldn't. And I think that the Redskins completely screwed up the end of the game. And I'm not saying that, you know, that running it once isn't a bad idea, but, you know, to me, to run it twice, the same play,
Dell
Betts, come on.
Boston College.
We were all shocked. I thought for sure they'd go play action there and maybe
something.
To,
do something,
something.
But I just don't get it. I didn't get how they ended that game.
What you think of the young Hayseed, Manning? He's getting
better. Because, you know, he's. I'm telling you guys, I've watched his last three games because, you know, I do that morning radio in New York. I've watched the last three games really closely, and I think he's finally turned the corner. He plays with some really unique characters, Plaxico Burress and Jeremy Shockey. Good players when they're on, but they dropped, I don't know, four or five balls on him yesterday.
Oh, Shockey, yep. Right down the middle of the field in a great pass.
Well, Plaxico,
that was
out.
The fourth period. But even Plaxico Burress had three drops in the first half. And, you know, he has to live through all of that. And I think one of the big things that drives New York fans crazy, Giant fans crazy in particular, about Eli is the body language after he makes a mistake. He made a bonehead interception, I think, in the fourth period, and he had that old Eli kind of Hayseed look to him. But he came back, you know, and I give him credit. I think he now is ready to take the next step and really become a reason why the Giants win games as opposed to why they lose.
He has a nice arm, though.
He's fine.
One more. Philadelphia. Interesting week for Donovan McNabb. Makes the statements in HBO earlier in the week, and then he goes out and plays the best football game he's probably played in 2.5 years.
That was a team that was playing really ugly football in pretty uniforms, and then they played really pretty football in ugly uniforms.
That's a good point.
My thing about Donovan McNabb, and James Brown works with me, so he was the one that did the interview on HBO, and I was just like everybody else. I wanted to kill him, and I came out and I said, listen, Donovan Donovan McNabb is being booed in Philadelphia, and you know what? He's one of the highest-paid players in football. I actually got booed in three different cities, so I know what it means to be booed, and I understand what it means to be scrutinized and criticized. But then James Brown told me something yesterday that didn't hit home with me, and it wouldn't hit home with me because of who I am, and I'll tell you why. Donovan McNabb was criticized throughout that whole Terrell Owens situation by the local chapter of the NAACP in Philadelphia.
Correct.
And I, you know, obviously, I don't know what that means to Donovan McNabb because I don't walk a mile in his shoes, as JB told me on Saturday. So there's some of that that goes along with some of the perceived, maybe the fact that he's not a white quarterback situation as well. So, you know, I have a better understanding of why he said what he said, but there's really no reason to talk about that, I don't think, because he is a very highly paid and a very, you know, a very good football player.
And they boo Santa Claus in Philadelphia.
Philly's the worst.
Yeah.
You know that.
Yeah, well, I know. But, you know, like I said, I got booed in Arizona when there were only 20,000 fans in the stadium, you know? So I know what being booed, because that really, when there's 20,000 fans, those are hardcore football fans. When they boo you, you know they're booing you. You know what I'm saying? I just thought I always just rectified it in my own mind that they were saying boo for Boomer.
See, I I thought that that aspect of it, and he was criticized by the head of the NAACP in Philadelphia for playing the position too white. That aspect of it, I understand.
That's a prejudice.
Where race was getting involved in it, I think his gripe this past week was more of, hey, listen, we start with Drew Bledsoe here in New England. This guy was maligned to no end. That had nothing to do with the color of his skin. He simply was not playing good football. The expectations were great, and at one time he did play great football or very good football at that position. So that's why they beat up on him. It had nothing to do with the color of his skin.
Well, Glenn, when they make that statement, he's playing white. That's what kind of statement is that?
That's a racist statement.
Like I said, guys, there's part of that whole area of where Donovan was trying to go to that none of us can understand because we don't walk in his shoes.
Correct.
So, and this is like JB was telling, he said yesterday and also told me on Saturday, I actually felt like an idiot when JB was telling me this because I criticized Donovan and I criticized him just from my perspective as a quarterback being scrutinized and booed. But JB said, listen, if you haven't walked a mile in a man's shoes, then I don't necessarily know that you want to tell him how he should react to something or how he should voice his opinion on something. And JB also wanted to make sure people understood that this interview was done in the summertime and that I think there was some of this attached to the fact that he was 0-2 and that maybe he was saying this because they were 0-2, which had nothing to do with any of the situation.
Well, Boomer, real quickly, though, JB criticized other people that he hasn't walked in their shoes either, so it works both ways.
I know it works both ways.
So we criticize for what we see, and he's never walked in my shoes, where I'm from. He hasn't walked in your shoes, so... Yeah, enough with that already. We criticize for what we see. Each one has a little more perspective into it, but he could say it on both sides of the fence.
Yeah, and listen, JB actually went back after him in the interview. You know, JB could have easily let the thing go, but if you watch the interview, and I've seen it now three different times, kind of like the Vince Wilfork thing, all these different angles, you know, I've heard it all different
ways. And I got the right angle.
Don't get him going again.
You just haven't seen
you
haven't walked in a nose tackle shoe, so let's bring it.
Right? There you go.
All right, so don't criticize.
No, and James Brown did do that because he came back and he said, well, aren't all quarterbacks criticized on a weekly basis? It's an interesting that you bring up that the thing was taped in the summertime because if the Eagles came out and played two great games, first 2 weeks of the season, it would not have been a big issue.
You don't think?
I do not. And it came off of a terrible game that was a nationally televised game. I mean, timing is everything.
And I know JB wasn't happy with the way HBO played the whole thing out, too, because, you know, listen, in our business, in the media business, whether it be television or radio, if you get somebody to say something that is somewhat controversial, then you're going to hear that snippet, and you might not get it in the full context of the entire interview. So I know JB was a little upset with that, and that he felt that HBO probably is a little bit culpable here as well.
All right, it's time for Boomer's Monday Night Football Pick of the Week, brought to you by DCU, Digital Federal Credit Union. Picked Philly last week, didn't you?
I did pick Philly last week. How about me? And then Philly turns around and looks like, you know, the juggernaut that I thought I was going to see last week.
Yeah.
But, you know, Bill Cowher said to me yesterday on the NFL Today, he said, you know, Boom, if you're 0-2 and you're playing at home, you're trying to save your season. And there isn't a more desperate team right now in the NFL than the New Orleans Saints, who are 0-2 coming into this game, two games on the road, and now they play a team that they are favored by and they should win. But the thing about the 10 Tennessee Titans that scares me is not Vince Young. Is that the Tennessee Titan defense is vastly underrated as they held Indianapolis to 22 points last week. I'm going to go with New Orleans tonight, and I'm going to say it's like a 24-17 game, and I think that the Superdome will be rocking, and I would imagine that Drew Brees and Reggie Bush and everybody on national television is going to look to save face tonight.
And they need it.
They definitely need it. Yeah. They need it in the worst way. I mean, we're down here in the French Quarter, and I mean, Saints fans, you know, last year were so high and so up on this team. And I mean, it's kind of morbid down here right now. It's really quiet. It's kind of eerie a little bit.
I was just going to ask you, how different is it in New Orleans now from what you remember a few years back?
Well, I was here last year for the opening game in the Superdome with the Atlanta Falcons a year removed from Katrina. And I went through the lower ninth ward just to go take a look at it. And then today when we landed, I went over there again because I wanted to see if there was any improvement or if there were things moving over there. You know, they bulldozed a lot of houses, and it's kind of eerie when you walk into a couple of the neighborhoods. There's nobody around. There's no people. There's no kids. There's no cat. There's no dogs running around. I mean, there's one out of, I think, nine schools is open. And, I mean, it's sad, guys. I mean, it really is. I mean, a lot of people are displaced. They're not here. I don't know what the government really can do. I know the government's trying to pump millions of dollars, billions of dollars down here, and it just doesn't seem like anything's really moving very rapidly. Now, in the French Quarter where we're staying, I think everything's pretty much back to normal. But up there in that lower ninth ward, well, I'll tell you what, it looked like pictures that we're seeing from Afghanistan and Iraq right now. And it also it reminds me of the old Vietnam War pictures when you see the guys pulling out of South Vietnam and you see all the neighborhoods bombed out, buildings and all that kind of stuff. That's what it looks like, and you can't believe that we're in the United States of America when you see it.
You're right. It's sad that it would happen right here on our own country.
There's not a big interest to move. If it happened in an area, there's a, you know, a New York area, people are going to come back.
The population is really
not. Yeah, there's not an attraction.
Well, I think they're fearful that it's going to happen again.
Yeah, plus,
you know, I had our driver here. She's a great lady, and she was telling me about her neighborhood, which was definitely taken out, and she had her insurance company came in and they paid her, but they wouldn't let her take the house down. They said you have to build it from the out. You got to leave the structure up, and then you got to build. And she was saying in the whole neighborhood where she lives, everybody went out and bought lawnmowers. And I said, well, why would everybody go out and buy lawnmowers? She said, because there's still about 10 or 15 houses where people haven't come back to. And we're all cutting the lawns. We're all practicing, you know, or taking turns cutting the lawns. So our neighborhood looks reasonable and looks decent. And I give her a lot of credit because
she
says, I drive every day, and I go home at night with my husband, and we take care of our house. We put our house back together. Insurance was good. FEMA helped a little bit, but not a lot. And so there are some people here that are up and running and doing really well, but then there are those areas that are just absolutely deplorable.
All right, Boomer likes the Saints tonight. Monday night pick of the week brought to you by DCU, a proud supporter of the Boomer Esiason Foundation, fighting cystic fibrosis. For banking the DCU way, go to DCU.org. For more information. Next week, we'll talk a little bit about the Boomer
Esiason
Foundation. We'll also talk about Monday Night Football because Boomer's going to be out in Cincinnati. And I also want to find out how the radio show's going in the morning because you've been on now, what, 5 weeks, 4 weeks?
Yeah, about 5 weeks now, yeah.
We'll talk about that next week.
Yeah, hey, I do like it, actually, but it's a grind. There's no question about it.
What time do you wake up in the morning?
Well, listen, 4:30, and on most Monday nights, I come to the game and I fly home right after the game. But today, because the flight's too long, I brought my crew down with me, and we're going to do the show from here tomorrow morning.
All right, Boomer, quickly, your top four teams in the NFL right now.
Top four teams: Patriots number one, Indianapolis Colts number two, Dallas Cowboys number three, and I'm going to have to say the Green Bay Packers number four. Mm-hmm. How about that?
Not bad, huh?
No Pittsburgh in the top four.
Well, Pittsburgh's number five. And right. The only reason I like Pittsburgh, their offense hasn't been great. I mean, their defense has been really good. Special teams has been good. I want to see the passing game. I want to see the passing game look like the Patriot passing game before I'm ready to.
When they play somebody. You know,
right.
Cleveland,
yeah, well,
Buffalo.
You can say the same thing about the Patriots, too, I guess, right?
Well, they played Cincinnati. They played two playoff teams.
No, they have, but they did, you know, but they've. Well, listen, Patriots are so far away better than everybody else right now. It's not even funny.
By the way, Boomer, just so you'll know, you probably hear it right through the wires and whatever. Fred's dressed up in a Patriots outfit here every Monday for the show. You probably noticed.
Just trying
to play the way it is.
Yeah, dressed up.
Just trying to play the part.
It's actually a Patriots cheerleader outfit.
Yeah, when you painted,
I'm trying to distract the other team.
When you painted your face today, that was a little too much.
That was too much.
I just can't imagine Freddie Smirlis running around in little boy shorts.
No, it's actually a thong.
Yeah,
scary. That is a big old hairy scary thought.
Boomer, we'll talk to you next week in Cincinnati.
Thanks,
always
Boomer.
A pleasure, my boys. Always a pleasure.
See you later. Take it easy. Boomer Esiason. He's in New Orleans tonight.
I like his picks.
And you'll hear that game tonight right here on WEEI.